Hi friends, Greg here. I know that many of you listening have a personal connection to the podcast and have likely heard the news, but for those who haven't, I imagine you've already guessed what I'm about to say from the title of this episode. As such, I'm going to get right to the point. If it sounds like I'm reading these comments, it's because, for the most part, I am. I'm not sure I could get through this otherwise. Friends, it's with immeasurable sadness and loss that I must bring you the news of Bird's passing. Our dear friend left this world on Sunday, April 16th, 2023, due to complications arising from the rapid onset of acute myeloid leukemia. It was completely unexpected. He'd only been in the hospital for a week, and the official diagnosis wasn't even made until several days after his passing. To everyone who spoke to him in the days and weeks leading up to his admission to the hospital, he seemed perfectly healthy. The extreme suddenness of it has left all of us who knew and loved him devastated and lost. The first week after it happened was, bar none, the worst of my life. Since then, I've just been trying to learn how to cope with the grief. I'm sorry it's taken me so long to release this. I wanted to record it sooner, but I just couldn't. It was too painful and exhausting. I wrote most of what I have to say here in the couple of weeks following his death. I've spent some time editing and trying to write more since then, but at this point it's just become too difficult. So I've just decided to record what I have. I'm intentionally going to leave my comments here relatively brief. Putting together a statement, as I said, has already been difficult enough. But I'll have more to say in coming episodes, which I'll discuss in a moment. First, however, I'd just like to say a few words about my friend. While many knew him as Bird, I had known him since early childhood and have always called him Mike, so I'm going to refer to him as such going forward. To put it simply, Mike was one of the best people I have ever known. He was kind, generous, vibrant, fun, thoughtful, self-reflective and self-critical, and brilliant. He was the kind of person of which you only meet one in your life. A person of such unique and wonderful qualities that he couldn't help but leave a positive mark on you. This was plain to everybody who knew him. It's probably an understatement to say that he really did change my life, both through his partnership with me in this podcast and with his friendship. There is essentially no part of my philosophy of life that I didn't at one point discuss with him and get his input on, and his insight into the things most important to me shaped who I am today. Of course, there were times when I took all of this for granted, but even while he was alive, I knew that every minute I got to spend with him was a gift. Honestly, I've known that my entire life. As I face the reality of his death, what I just can't come to terms with is that I have to go through the rest of my life without him. All the books I'll read and never be able to talk to him about them. All the difficulties I'll face and not be able to get his honest input on. He should have been an influence on me throughout my life. Should have been a role model for my children. The outpouring of love and support I've received from you all has been overwhelming. All the kind words for Mike, the podcast, and me have meant so much more than I could possibly express here. To all of you who have supported us, either with kind words, feedback, or just by listening these past years, you have my gratitude forever. Mike loved this project, poured his soul into it, and even the modest success we achieved meant so much to him. I'd like to offer a couple specific thanks, if I can. First, to Mike's family. Thank you for the part you played in making him into the person he was. I have always admired and loved your family, but as I've spent more time with you over these past months, it has become so clear that his many wonderful qualities were rooted in all of you. Thank you also for the kindness and love you have always shown to my family. It is truly one of the great honors of my life to have been so close to Mike and it might never have happened if not for the friendship between our families. And finally, thank you for the strength you have shown. Even though your grief is the greatest, you have provided so much comfort to the rest of us. I'd also like to thank all of you at the restaurant where Mike worked. The generosity and kindness you have shown to me and Allie upon first meeting has left us at a loss for words. I'm sorry I didn't get to know many of you while Mike was here, but I hope we have the opportunity to do so in the future. You were so important to him, and a significant piece of him, one that I didn't get to see much of, still lives in you. Please know that I'll always be here for you in whatever capacity I can be. Now I'll speak briefly about the podcast itself. We recorded 4 more episodes than what we have released thus far. It's my intention to post those in the coming months, but please have patience with me. Editing and preparing each episode for release is quite a bit of work, not to mention the emotional toll that doing so will inevitably cause. It may be some time before I'm capable of listening to them. It took me months before I could even watch Seinfeld again, as stupid as that is. But he'd kill me if he knew that. Beyond that, I don't really know what I'm going to do with the project. At the moment, the thought of continuing it in some fashion is too painful to consider. I think it's likely that Mike would want me to do so, but going on without him just doesn't seem possible. In my opinion, he was always the spark of the podcast. He brought a life and a passion to it that I never could have. If any of you have an opinion on what I should do, please feel free to contact me via the podcast email address listed in every episode description. I promise to check it as often as I can. Whatever I decide, I'm going to do everything I can to keep the podcast available online forever. I want it to remain as a memorial to him, to his passion and his brilliance. But as we have all become so painfully aware, the future is never certain. So I'd like to make it possible for all of you to be able to download the audio files directly so you can save them yourselves. But I haven't looked into details on how to do that yet. I may be able to share the raw audio files on an individual basis if needed, but depending on demand, that might just not be feasible. I'll continue to explore options in that regard, and we'll update you all in the intro to those forthcoming episodes. I had the tremendous honor of speaking at Mike's funeral several months ago. There was so much I wanted to share about what he and I learned together through this project. I shared some of that, but if I'd had unlimited time, I would have read a particular excerpt from Man's Search for Meaning. It's one I've come back to many times since I first encountered it, and of all the life-changing passages we read together, this is the one I've remembered most frequently in these past months. If you would all indulge me, I'd like to read the passage in its entirety now. It's about 4.5 pages long and will just take a few minutes. I read part of it in our discussion of the book on the podcast, so please forgive me for repeating myself. In the introduction of my edition of Man's Search for Meaning, Harold S. Kushner writes, "Typically, if a book has one passage, one idea with the power to change a person's life, that alone justifies reading it, rereading it, and finding room for it on one's shelves. This book has several such passages." I honestly don't exaggerate when I say that this passage has changed my life. There are still some times when I can barely get through it, when the weight of its words is almost crushing. But it has been a lifeline to me in this time of pain and grief, and I hope you find some meaning in it as well. In attempting the psychological presentation and a psychopathological explanation of the typical characteristics of a concentration camp inmate, I may give the impression that the human being is completely and unavoidably influenced by his surroundings, in this case the surroundings being the unique structure of camp life, which forced the prisoner to conform his conduct to a certain set pattern. But what about human liberty? Is there no spiritual freedom in regard to behavior and reaction in it? To any given surroundings? Is that theory true, which would have us believe that man is no more than a product of many conditional and environmental factors, be they of a biological, psychological, or sociological nature? Is man but an accidental product of these? Most important, do the prisoners' reactions to the singular world of the concentration camp prove that man cannot escape the influences of his surroundings? Does man have no choice of action in the face of such circumstances? We can answer these questions from experience as well as on principle. The experiences of camp life show that man does have a choice of action. There were enough examples, often of a heroic nature, which proved that apathy could be overcome, irritability suppressed. Man can preserve a vestige of spiritual freedom, of independence of mind, even in such terrible conditions of psychic and physical stress. We who lived in concentration camps can remember the men who walked through the huts comforting others, giving away their last piece of bread. They may have been few in number, but they offer sufficient proof that everything can be taken from a man but one thing, the last of the human freedoms, to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's own way. And there were always choices to make. Every day, every hour, offered the opportunity to make a decision which determined whether you would or would not submit to those powers which threatened to rob you of your very self, your inner freedom, which determined whether or not you would become the plaything of circumstance, renouncing freedom and dignity to become molded into the form of the typical inmate. Seen from this point of view, the mental reactions of the inmates of a concentration camp must seem more to us than the mere expression of certain physical and sociological conditions. Even though conditions such as lack of sleep, insufficient food, and various mental stresses may suggest that the inmates were bound to react in certain ways, in the final analysis, it becomes clear that the sort of person the prisoner became was the result of an inner decision, and not the result of camp influences alone. Fundamentally, therefore, any man can, even under such circumstances, decide what shall become of him, mentally and spiritually. He may retain his human dignity even in a concentration camp. Dostoevsky said once, "There is only one thing that I dread, not to be worthy of my sufferings." These words frequently came to my mind after I became acquainted with those martyrs whose behavior in camp, whose suffering and death, bore witness to the fact that the last inner freedom cannot be lost. It can be said that they were worthy of their sufferings. The way they bore their suffering was a genuine inner achievement. It is this spiritual freedom, which cannot be taken away, that makes life meaningful and purposeful. An active life serves the purpose of giving man the opportunity to realize values in creative work, while a passive life of enjoyment affords him the opportunity to obtain fulfillment in experiencing beauty, art, or nature. But there is also purpose in that life which is almost barren of both creation and enjoyment, and which admits of but one possibility of high moral behavior, namely, in man's attitude to his existence, an existence restricted by external forces. A creative life and a life of enjoyment are banned to him. But not only creativeness and enjoyment are meaningful. If there is a meaning in life at all, then there must be a meaning in suffering. Suffering is an ineradicable part of life, even as fate and death. Without suffering and death, human life cannot be complete. The way in which a man accepts his fate and all the suffering it entails, the way in which he takes up his cross, gives him ample opportunity, even under the most difficult circumstances, to add a deeper meaning to his life. It may remain brave, dignified, and unselfish. Or in the bitter fight for self-preservation, he may forget his human dignity and become no more than an animal. Here lies the chance for a man either to make use of or to forego the opportunities of attaining the moral values that a difficult situation may afford him, and this decides whether he is worthy of his sufferings or not. Do not think that these conditions are unworldly and too far removed from real life. It is true that only a few people are capable of reaching such high moral standards. Of the prisoners, only a few kept their full inner liberty and obtained those values which their suffering afforded. But even one such example is sufficient proof that man's inner strength may raise him above his outward fate. Such men are not only in concentration camps. Everywhere man is confronted with fate, with the chance of achieving something through his own suffering. Take the fate of the sick, especially those who are incurable. I once read a letter written by a young invalid in which he told a friend that he had just found out he would not live for long, that even an operation would be of no help. He wrote further that he remembered a film he had seen in which a man was portrayed who waited for death in a courageous and dignified way. The boy had thought it a great accomplishment to meet death so well. Now, he wrote, fate was offering him a similar chance. Those of us who saw the film called Resurrection, taken from a book by Tolstoy years ago, may have had similar thoughts. Here were great destinies and great men. For us at the time, there was no great fate. There was no chance to achieve such greatness. After the picture, we went to the nearest cafe, and over a cup of coffee and a sandwich, we forgot the strange metaphysical thoughts which for one moment had crossed our minds. But when we ourselves were confronted with a great destiny, and faced with the decision of meeting it with equal spiritual greatness, by then we had forgotten our youthful resolutions of long ago, and we failed. Perhaps there came a day for some of us when we saw the same film again, or a similar one. But by then other pictures may have simultaneously unrolled before one's inner eye, pictures of people who attained much more in their lives than a sentimental film could show. Some details of a particular man's inner greatness may have come to one's mind, like the story of the young woman whose death I witnessed in a concentration camp. It is a simple story. There is little to tell, and it may sound as if I have invented it, but to me it seems like a poem. This young woman knew that she would die in the next few days, but when I talked to her, she was cheerful in spite of this knowledge. "I am grateful that fate has hit me so hard," she told me. "In my former life, I was spoiled and did not take spiritual accomplishments seriously." Pointing through the window of the hut, she said, "This tree here is the only friend I have in my loneliness." Through that window, she could see just one branch of a chestnut tree, and on the branch were two blossoms. "I often talk to this tree," she said to me. I was startled and didn't quite know how to take her words. Was she delirious? Did she have occasional hallucinations? Anxiously, I asked her if the tree replied. "Yes." "What did it say to her?" She answered, "It said to me, 'I am here. I am here. I am life. Eternal life.'" None of us gets to choose our own destiny, friends. But it's the one you have. Don't miss it. Mike faced his, and now we must face ours. I think I'm going to end this recording here. As I said, I'll have more to say when I release the remaining discussions, the next one being Dostoevsky's Notes from Underground. It's also my intention to read the final book Mike chose, which was Kierkegaard's Fear and Trembling. I doubt I'll do a full recording dedicated to it, but I at least want to share my thoughts on it in the preface to one of those remaining episodes, in case any of you would like to read along. Mike had chosen it after our final discussion in spring 2022, but we hadn't set a timeline for reading it until this past spring. I will say that he chose it very intentionally. He'd been talking about reading Kierkegaard for a while, and he was eager to get to this book in particular. For my part, I'd just like to say that the purpose of this podcast was never to be right. We unquestionably said many stupid things, probably more stupid things than intelligent ones. The goal was always to explore. Ultimately, we were both hoping to find our voice, to read the best words that had ever been written, and then discover what we ourselves had to say. I think Mike accomplished that, and I'm glad I got to witness it. Anyways, for now, I'd just like to close with Etude Opus 2, Number 1 by Alexander Scriabin, the piece we play at the beginning and end of each episode. Mike was the one who chose it, and I'm going to play it in its entirety as a tribute to him. Thank you all for listening. Thank you for your love and support. Until next time.